What a weekend of football it was, both in college and the pros. We haven't even gotten around to the college football yet. We will do that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. There were so many great games in week one. None more satisfying, I think, than the Sunday night affair, which was Bills and Ravens. And we're going to catch up with our friend Maggie Gray here in just a second of the Infinity Sports Network. She's a huge Bills fan. Wanted to have her on to talk about that. Excuse me. As well as the NFL slate. She's a longtime NFL insider as well. Because if you're a Bills fan, did you go to sleep? I'm going to ask Maggie honestly. Did she stay up to the end of that game? Because it looked over. It looked like the proverbial fat lady had sung. And that one was all she wrote. Until it wasn't. League MVP put the team on his back. And he showed why he is the reigning MVP. To talk about all that and more, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in, Maggie Gray, co-host on the Infinity Sports Network, Maggie and Perloff. Maggie, I thought about doing the right thing and starting with maybe your thoughts on Michael Penix or another tough loss for the Falcons, but I got to know, what was it like sitting there on Sunday night watching that comeback for your Bills against the Ravens? Because that feeling is, to be honest, one we don't get here in Atlanta very often.
Oh, Chris, thanks so much for having me on. And thanks for thinking of me when the Bills actually do something right, because there's a lot of the Bills history, and I'm a diehard Bills fan from upstate New York, the boondocks of upstate New York. There's a lot of times that usually doesn't go the Bills' favor, in their favor. The Bills have a long history with Derrick Henry, even going back to the Titans, that is pretty ugly. Henry has really gotten the best of the Bills in a lot of different ways and areas, and at times has really steamrolled them. So the fact that he was killing Buffalo, I mean, they could not stop him until the fumble, the irony that he was both the GOAT and the GOAT of the game, right? He was like the greatest and also the one who created the moment that really let Buffalo and made the comeback a reality. It was just stunning. Again, like the Bills and the Ravens kind of have a lot in common that way. They've both kind of been snake bitten. Now the Ravens have actually won Super Bowls, but you know, they've been snake bitten lately and not been able to get over the hump. And the fact that the Bills were on the right side of this, quite frankly, I'm still stunned.
Yeah, it was one of the more epic games you'll watch. Another epic game from the weekend, the Aaron Rodgers revenge game, which couldn't have gone better for him. But let me ask you this. Who were you more surprised by, Rodgers or Fields? Because they both played really well.
Yeah, I was actually more surprised with how Justin Fields looks, to be honest. I thought that he looked a lot more in control, a lot more steady. You know, the passing game was actually there. I was most surprised, if you're talking about any individual unit, I don't know what it foreshadows for the season, but I was surprised the Steelers' defense wasn't better. You know, that's kind of been their calling card through all the ups and downs of all the different quarterbacks they've tried since Ben Roethlisberger retired, and the lack of creativity on offense with the Steelers. Their defense has been what's really carried them. And the fact that they let up over 30 points to the New York Jets, even if I wasn't impressed by Justin Fields, that's still a lot. So I was probably more impressed by Fields. The thing about Rodgers, first of all, just from like Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of personality, which, you know, some people love, some people don't. I'm surprised he even really acknowledged this as being a revenge game. And I get that they cut him, and I understand that Aaron Glenn, the new head coach of the Jets, brought him in basically to tell him to get the hell out, you know, and I could see how that would chap him, you know, as a four-time MVP and a Super Bowl champ. But he was barely a Jet. Like, who's going to remember that? This part of his career, I think it's going to be a real footnote. And, you know, Rodgers saying, oh, I wanted to beat everybody associated with the Jets. It's like, dude, they rolled out the red carpet for you on so many occasions. They hired your offensive coordinator, your best friend is an offensive coordinator who was terrible, and Nathaniel Hackett. They brought all your cronies in. You know, I find it hard, you know, to kind of be sympathetic to Rodgers on that one. But to be fair to him, football-wise, he looked great. I mean, he looked as good as he's looked. The arm strength is always going to be there. And I thought he was moving around pretty well, too.
In your opinion, a couple of years ago, they looked unstoppable on offense. What's happened to the Dolphins? And then what happened to Daniel Jones? Was it just as simple as you get out of New York and then you shine somewhere else?
Yeah, New York football has been a rough scene for, I don't know, the last decade, more if it's the Jets, but the Giants have not been good. Well, first things first with Daniel Jones. Let's see. You know, they've got some tougher defenses coming up with the Colts, and I know the Colts have some weapons, but Daniel Jones, you know, I'm not wishing this on him, but, you know, history will tell you that he's going to get hurt, or, you know, there's a strong possibility of that. And maybe he's found the perfect coach with Shane Steichen. I want to see a little bit more before I believe in, what are they calling him, Indiana Jones now. Yeah. I don't know if he's saving the day quite yet for the Colts. Let's see them play a team that actually cares. There was no evidence that Miami Dolphins wanted any part of that game. And obviously, you know, Mike McDaniel's been on the hot seat for a little bit, but, you know, that was an abomination, totally embarrassing. And, you know, we were talking about this on our show today about when you win, you know, your quirks and your sort of like, you know, your eccentricities, if you will, can become very charming. And then when you're losing, they become very annoying, I think, to the fan base. And so, you know, Mike McDaniel kind of, you know, up at the press conference, I don't even know how many fans really care about the press conference, but like up there kind of giving these weird answers to questions about, you know, just I'm one day closer to death, like these weird responses. I think we're a lot cuter when Tua Tagovailoa looked like one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And now that he doesn't, this is, the act is kind of falling, wearing thin.
More of a coming out party for the Chargers and Herbert, or more real concern for the Chiefs?
Oh, man, I felt like the Chargers were kind of treating this like their Super Bowl in a way, which at some points is admirable because they have not been able to beat the Chiefs in, what was it, like the last six tries or more. So you can understand why they're really gunning for a division opponent. I mean, it's been the Chiefs world. Basically, we're all living in it up until, you know, last February when the Eagles smacked them around and maybe some of the shine and veneer came off of the Chiefs, possibly. But I think the Chargers were really treating this like, you know, this was going to set the tone for their whole season. And sometimes I wonder if you are on that kind of high and you put so much into that first game, do you get a little bit of a letdown afterwards? You know, listen, this is like historically Jim Harbaugh. This is when he really, like, really makes, you know, his huge impact on different programs. It took him obviously a little bit longer at Michigan to win, but, you know, historically, this has always been a big year. Year two has been a big year for him in any organization. So maybe we're seeing that. I want to see a little bit more though, because there's a reason why chargering is like a term. And, you know, Justin Herbert, for as talented as this guy is, you know, looked just absolutely abominable in the playoff game last year against Houston. So kind of want to see a little more before I make a determination on him.
Well, even his predecessor with LaDainian Tomlinson and Antonio Gates and everybody else they had, Phillip Rivers, never made the Super Bowl. So it's pretty crazy to think about going all the way back to then. We're talking with Maggie Gray, Infinity Sports Network morning show co-host Maggie and Perloff. Are you on team start dart or team let him ride?
Oh, I would have started dart at halftime. I mean, what are you even waiting for? And that's not a disrespect to Russell Wilson. I know what he's meant to the league. I understand that. But if you're the New York Giants, I mean, I get it. You have Andrew Thomas out, one of their standout left tackle. I get that you don't want to put dart, just throw him out there and have him get killed behind a bad offensive line. But we already know what we're going to get here with Russell Wilson, don't we? And, you know, there's never really a perfect time to throw a rookie in the fire. You know, playing against the Cowboys, who didn't, you know, have much of a pass rush, clearly missed Micah Parsons, might not be a terrible spot. I had slated, before the season started, I thought their road game at New Orleans was probably the time they would start him. I believe that's week five. But at this point, I'm not going to say what does it matter, but like, look how overmatched they were against the Washington Commanders. The Commanders didn't even play that great on offense. Like, if this had been mid-season kind of Commanders or whatever we think mid-season looked like for them, they could have won that game by a lot more. And, you know, to me, I think it's not just a fan thing. I imagine it has to be a coaching thing too. Like all these guys, their jobs are tied into Jackson Dart. I would start them, like give hope to the fan base where they've had very little.
49ers done before this thing even gets started. It looks like Kittle's going to be out at least a month.
Oh man, can I make a confession to your audience, and I hope that I can still maintain some kind of credibility with them.
Oh boy, I have a feeling where this is going.
I picked the 49ers to win the Super Bowl.
I knew it.
It was
a terrible choice.
It was a terrible choice. I'm sorry though, and here was my logic. My logic was, you know, I understood that there still were some injuries, but I didn't think it'd be possible that the injury bug would hit them as bad as it did last year when they were the most injured team in the NFL. Because historically, the 49ers kind of toggle back and forth between like a really bad injury season, then a really good season of health. And I was kind of banking on the pendulum sort of swinging back health-wise in their favor. Yeah, George Kittle's now out for several weeks. Brock Purdy is already dealing with an issue on his non-throwing shoulder. And, you know, he's a tough guy. And he's got a toe issue, which is, you know, we should probably be paying more attention to that than we already are. I'm worried that I got really, I'm going to be snake bitten here because they have the easiest schedule in the NFL. So I thought they'd be able to really hang. But I'm looking around the NFC and I'm looking around at some of the defenses. I think the offenses will catch up, but just some of the defenses that we saw even week one, and yikes. I mean, that's going to be difficult, you know. Green Bay's got a great defense. The Rams have a great defense. You know, it's just the Commanders have a great defense. There's just a lot of really good defenses in the NFC. It's going to be a challenge.
You think the Lions are in real trouble without their coordinators?
I do. I really do. That did not look the same. And again, maybe this is the Packers' defense is just lights out. That's totally possible. But I'll tell you what, that offense just did not have any of the speed, the zip. I mean, they had no ground game to speak of. And it's funny because I think people look at the Lions and say, oh, it's all about Dan Campbell, you know, the Danimal always going for it on fourth down. And it's this high-flying offense that scores a lot. It's a run-based offense, like a lot of teams in the NFL. But, like, them running the ball, it was always their secret weapon. And they got bub-kissed against the Packers. Again, you know, Packers just could be awesome and maybe they'll find some of their mojo and magic back, but Jared Goff had no time, which is never a good recipe, and the run game couldn't do anything. So, yeah, I'm concerned for sure, especially on the offensive side.
Before I let you go, another heartbreaking loss here in Atlanta, and the only way that the Falcons know how, your kicker who was an all-pro a couple of years ago misses a chip shot 43-yarder at the buzzer, which would have sent it into overtime. But outside of that, Maggie, did you think the Falcons, particularly on offense, looked like they have the promise that we're all hoping for?
Yeah, I don't know if, like, is there a moratorium on Penix just the tip jokes in your radio station? We've already done them to death, and it was only week one. But I thought that he was really impressive. You know, we're going around looking at all the second-year quarterbacks, and I feel like he's definitely not the weak link. I mean, that's for sure. What was it, an 18-play drive? Very impressive. You know, obviously Tampa's defense is really good. Probably should have included them in one of the great defenses in the NFC. I was shocked that Young Wei Koo missed that field goal. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to rub it in. I was just stunned that he missed because he's automatic. And I just assumed that game was going to overtime, and who knows what would happen there. But I was really just sort of just stunned. And I don't think it means much because I think he's going to rebound and be fine. But I would have liked to see that game go to overtime because it was a really entertaining back and forth, lead changes all over the place. And you know, I hope that the Falcon fans, I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but, you know, forest through the trees a little bit, right? Like the fact that Penix looked good in week one is the most important thing. And a divisional loss stinks, and you hate to start the season that way, but like the bigger picture is positive.
Well, I'll tell you what. Little inside scoop here from Atlanta, Maggie. We are all on cut coup watch here. That's where we're at. That's where we're at right now. They brought in a kicker today to have some competition. A guy that's been a fringe kicker in the NFL. Ironically, Maggie kicked for the Vikings last year for four games, and he went 11-12. So maybe a little homecoming in Minnesota. We all are not going to be surprised here if in a day or two, Young Wei Koo has played his last game as a Falcon.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I did not see that, and I'm pretty stunned. You know, the 49ers waived Jake Moody today. I mean, I don't think you want any part of that.
No.
That's crazy. They're going to cut him because of that? He made so many huge kicks last year.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. He was tied or just behind Justin Tucker going into last season for the best kicking percentage all time. And then he missed nine kicks last year, but it was partially due to a hip injury. So we all thought he was going to be okay. Comes back this year, wins the kicking competition over a NFL international prospect by the name of Lenny Krieg. And then he was all set to go week one. And then that happened. So,
oh, man. You know, it's funny. I'm sorry that I didn't know that he missed 9 kicks last year. So apologies for not having that number. But it's funny. I was watching the quarterback show on Netflix, which I'm sure you guys all watch when they're following Kirk Cousins. And it felt like Koo was like the real star of the Kirk Cousins storyline, you know, because he kept kicking these, you know, amazing, you know, he kept coming up so clutch, you know, in the first part of the season. So I guess, yeah, he got hurt and it kind of fell apart. Huh?
Maggie, he was automatic, again, to the point where he was putting up like Hall of Fame record number statistics. And then last year happened and he just completely fell off the table. None of us saw it coming. But then again, like I said, this year he came back. He looked great in preseason. He was making all of his kicks. We all thought he was ready to go for act number two. And then he doinked one, and then he missed the big one. So, unfortunately, yeah, we're looking at a ticking clock here for Younghoe Koo. He may get one more shot at it. We don't know for sure yet. But, again, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a new kicker kicking for the Falcons on Sunday night in primetime versus Minnesota. Maggie, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon. Love talking ball with you.
Thanks so much, Chris. Talk to you soon. And thanks so much for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Maggie Gray there, Infinity Sports Network morning show co-host with Andrew Perloff. Maggie and Perloff, yeah, man, it's not good. When you say, Oren, when you say all that out loud, doesn't sound good. Really doesn't. Yeah, our Hall of Fame kicker just like fell off the table completely and is now unplayable to the point where he's probably going to get cut. 404-726-0929. Only the Falcons. Only the Falcons. When we get back, I know we're running a little bit behind, but that was good stuff with Maggie. A football frenzy. And don't forget, Sports Talk on 92.9 The Game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS. And Paramount Plus, stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.